another episode of the Comic Book Legion podcast. I am Mark, and with me we got the birthday boy, Clay. What's up, dude?
I'm good, man. You didn't even notice my birthday gift.
Oh, is it the pop filter?
No, it is the entire thing. So the arm, because what I used to have is this thing right here, just on my desk. It was a, just a regular like table stand and the mic. But I woke up to my wife, like, she had just finished it, so she was in here. I was trying to find her because she left me like this little like crate on the bed that had like happy birthday, and it had like a birthday cookie. It had a bag of hot Cheetos with like an
what kind of cookie?
It was just like a regular like iced cookie. Like, I guess I don't know how to explain it. If I had like, it's still over there.
Is it like those sugar cookies that have like an icing on the top?
Yeah, but this one had like fine icing to the point where like you could like have a message on it or whatever. And so The icing spelled out like happy birthday on it. So it was big enough to have the wording on it. It had like a bag of hot Cheetos, like a thing of like unsweetened tea, a toothbrush box. Like, it was really weird. She got me a new toothbrush and I looked at it, and just the box itself looked like something out of like something an astronaut would use, because it was like this tall, and I was like, what in the world is this? She's like, it's a toothbrush. I was like, okay, I guess. And she bought me this cool, it's like a cup holder for your car, but it doesn't hold cups, it holds your phone, to where like you can put it inside the cup holder in your car and then attach your phone to it, so that way your phone doesn't like move or anything and you have a place for it. So that was pretty cool too. I was wanting one of those, but I came into here, into my office room or whatever, and I saw the arm and a new mic and a pop filter, and I was like, oh my gosh. And she is in the other room. I think she's cooking breakfast right now. So she doesn't know that I did the research. I think she spent like freaking like $200 on this whole mic setup. And I'm like, oh my God, it's awesome.
See, the thing is that I've just all these days, I just glow and I stare into your flowing locks out of jealousy that I never noticed that the mic, I was actually one. I was like, man, where the hell is the gift? Not knowing that there was a pop filter, like staring, like smacking me in the face. Nope, nice. Never noticed. But that's just because I don't pay attention to things. And that's usually how I live life. But besides that, where'd you go for dinner? I know you mentioned you were going out to dinner.
We ate at, do you guys have a place called Chewy's up north?
Chewy's? If we do, I don't know about it.
Okay, it's like a Mexican-esque restaurant. It's Tex-Mex. So majority of us just had like enchiladas, and my brother had a burrito, but it was a nice little place. Most of my family couldn't make it, but my grandparents made it. My mom and stepdad made it. All my brothers made it, which was really nice.
This is when you have to ask your abuelita to make you the blueberry and say, hey, not only for Thanksgiving, hook it up.
I know. I really should have, dude. I really should have. And it was so funny because, the name of the dessert is like escaping my mind. With the powder, with the, oh my gosh,
funnel cake.
No, it's not funnel cake. It's like a Hispanic dessert
with powder.
Yeah, oh my gosh, it is
arroz con leche.
No.
But that's like, because they sprinkle, like, some put, like, sprinkled, like, cinnamon on top. That's why I'm trying to.
Yeah, no, it's like a white powder. I can't remember the dessert. But they bring that out and, like, a small scoop of ice cream. And they're like, okay, we're going to sing happy birthday. And so my whole family sang happy birthday. And because I didn't have candles, I wanted to make a joke. And so I blew on the dessert with all the powder, and it went everywhere. It went everywhere. It got on my mom's clothes, on her phone, on my wife, on me, on my brother that was like sitting next to me. It was hilarious, and like my whole face was all white. It was funny.
I'm sure they were so happy.
Oh, no, like, most of, like, all the little kids laughed, like, all the grandkids and my little sister, they all laughed, and my grandfather got a kick out of it, but then my mom was like, did you just sneeze? I was like, no, I blew out the candles, and they all just, like, stared at me. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I wanted to be in the birthday spirit, you know?
Seriously. No, I hear you. That's funny.
But I
don't know the dessert. Now I'm curious which one it is.
I know. I'll have to send you a picture because I'm pretty sure my mom has a picture. But I also got, at the end of the night, my wife gave me another gift. She gave me a $30 gift card to Amazon. I got like a total of like $40 from my family that night. So
okay.
I think, and we were talking about it before we started recording, but I think I'm going to purchase volume one of Lock and Key so that way I can read.
Is it a chiffon?
Is it? Oh my gosh.
That it kind of looks like a cake that has powdered sugar and then some people put like ice cream on the side or.
Yeah, and like they drizzle. Like, some people drizzle like chocolate on it and stuff.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay, I'm not gonna. I like food, so I'm not gonna drop it. So, anyways, so today was a big day, and now today it is New Comic Book Day. So, January 8th. So, happy New Comic Book Day to whoever. Well, no one's gonna listen to this on Wednesday, so that doesn't matter. But for us, it was a big deal because, well, at least for me, I am a huge fan of this comic book that just finished releasing its own TV show, which is Lock and Key. Now, I know we primarily talk about DC Comics, but you know what? Screw it. This is Lock and Key. This is one of the greatest indie creator-owned projects. And you know what? I guess it's related. It's Joe Hill. He has his own imprint with DC Black Label right now, which is the Hill House. And it was luckily for you, because I feel like an idiot, because here I am asking, when's the trailer coming out? And then, of course, it was out already for like an hour. That tells you how little I actually check Twitter. That I couldn't even tell that. But what, for someone on the outside, what did you think of that trailer?
It was interesting. You know, it got, I'm trying to think of like the vibe it gave. You know, for somebody who was really big into novels before they were into comics as a kid, I would say that if you ever get the chance to read Artemis Fowl. I know that Disney is making a movie which looks nothing like how the book is perceived. But if you ever get the chance to read Artemis Fowl, or if you ever read the book The Circle series by Ted Decker, it's like a Christian fiction book. It gave that kind of vibe. And with, of course, a little bit of the horror. You know, the suspense. And I was like genuinely, I watched this almost 3-minute trailer and I was completely entranced. You know, for something that I have never really dove into, I know that you talked about it a lot. Me working at a comic book shop last year or the year before that, you know, I really, really dug a lot of the conversations that were coming out of Lock and Key and how highly it was recommended. I never had the chance to read it, but now that the show's coming out, I kind of want to set aside some time to be like, hey, I have to read at least the first volume. And if it really, you know, grabs my attention, I'll continue the series. How many volumes does it have out so far? Is it like completely finished?
It's done. But there are six, because each volume sets aside one key that you find in Key House.
Okay.
So it's kind of
now so
it's really just one long. There's no different story arcs, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're reading Walking Dead, you go from, oh, it's Georgia, and then they're going here, they go to Herschel's farm. Oh, now they're in the prison, the governor.
Yeah.
Like it's not like that.
But in here you say Key House, but not necessarily one key, but one Key House, right?
Yes, it's one Key House, and in there are many.
Multiple. Okay. Because I was going to say, I was like, okay, well, in this show, like in the trailer at least, because it comes out February 7th, in this trailer, it looked like they showed, like, I think a total, like, 3 keys. And also, if you watch the entire trailer, now it says...
Oh, yes, yes.
It
there's,
has...
there's definitely something at the end.
Yeah, it has 2 minutes and 55 seconds. I think the actual trailer ends at about 2 minutes, 49 seconds. But keep watching. At the very, very end, there is a URL, a link. You can't click on it. You have to type it out. It gives you an inside look at the show. Me and Mark watched it live together right before we started recording. And it's gotten me, like, super intrigued. Yeah, Mark's over here is like, oh, this is that person. Okay, yeah. This is so good. And I'm just what is going on?
Right now, it's kind of like, when I saw the trailer, I was more about... And I guess this is sometimes, like, I guess the fault of being, like, a really big fan of something.
Uh-huh.
Where you're not even really watching the trailer. You're just trying to see what did they get right and what did they get wrong. Like, what's different.
Okay, yeah.
So it's like, it's kind of like, I have to see it now with just eyes of, like, forget about, okay, that this was a book that I read. Because honestly, that's why, I mean, I was watching the trailer. I'm like, oh, okay, so yeah, they clearly changed all this up to make it more along for, you know, a TV show to make it work, you know, because it can't be that slow. You can't have, like, one season for one key. You know?
Yeah, for sure.
So that's what...
But...
I'm curious on how they're going to do it, but...
To think about how you had said each volume is one key house, if there's six key houses...
No, not one key house. It's all in... It's all located at the key house. Like, that home that you saw in that area is...
Oh, okay, okay.
That is vital. But what I'm saying is that there is one skeleton key, let's just say, for...
Okay.
Lack of a better term. There is one... It's different skeleton key that unlocks a different power.
Oh. So, do you think that there would be enough content throughout the 6 volumes to stretch out? Because I'm assuming 6 skeleton keys, correct?
Yeah.
Would you say there's enough content? No spoilers.
I mean, no spoilers. I know, that's why I'm trying not to...
But do you think there is enough content for Lock and Key to go for, let's say, 6 seasons?
No, because when you get into the nitty-gritty of reading the actual, like, graphic novels, like the trades,
uh-huh,
you'll notice that they're very quick reads.
Ooh.
There's a lot to unpack.
Uh-huh.
But it could just be that, man, this book is so crazy that I would go, because the first thing I did was, normally what I do sometimes with creator-owned is, especially with a creator I don't know, is I'll go to the library and I'll rent the book in the library. And then if I really enjoy it, then I'll buy it.
Okay.
And I do that. I only do that with creator-owned. And this was a book that I fell in love with volume one. And luckily the library had the first 3 volumes. So I read the first 3 volumes, and I read them all in, like, a span of, I mean, it took 2 days, but it took maybe, like, a total of, like, 3 hours reading.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, it's really good. Like, you're not going to get the Bendis or the Scott Snyder, like, or Kate's, you know, like, the dialogue overload. It's not, like, one of those. Like, sure, you'll get some parts, but it's not really like that. Like, I feel like it flows really, really well.
Nice. Yeah, I'm trying to see if they have any writing credits for the show right now. To see if Joe Hill is actually, like a really big part of it, rather than just using his book, you know?
No, yeah, for sure. So
I can't see anything right now, but it's
hard to answer the key question. But yeah, it's really, really good. So the trailer, I have to see it again because I was only looking at inaccuracies and what was the same. So the one thing I didn't see in this trailer that I really do hope is that they do have Rufus, Rufus is the man, and you'll know who Rufus is once you read the book. But in honor of Joe Hill, where actually this was an extremely small week for DC, considering how crazy the 2 weeks ago was.
Let me just say that the start of 2020 has not been very, what's the word I'm looking for? Extravagant. Or, really in our face. You know, I feel like New Year's, the amount of books that we had was kind of lackluster. And the same with this week. You know, of course, the Dollhouse and just the Joe Hill comics in general have been pretty good books throughout. Still, you know, this is only issue 3, and Daphne Byrne is only issue 1. But all the other books have still been pretty good. And, you know, as far as, the key characters in DC, we only have, one character, and that's Batman for this week. There's not really anything super big for this week that caught my attention.
Yeah, because, I mean, most of the other books we just don't read, so we're, besides, I think, Clay, who hates read Bendis. I mean, I'm not going to, hate read a book. So if there's a book that doesn't interest me, I'm just not going to read it for the sake of my own sanity. And if I feel like later on something happens that references that book, then I'll read it. But if not, I'm okay with the way I'm reading books right now. And I think that's just from a method of, you know, in the past, just doing a show where you're reviewing Marvel, Indie, and DC all the time, and you're reading 30 books and books you don't even want to read, that I'm over that. So I'm just at a point where I'll read what I want to read, and we're good. That's why I didn't want to harp anything on Clay, but it's kind of fun seeing him pissed off with Bendis. So let's jump on to the Dollhouse Family number 3. So the solicit reads, childhood, which would have made this book a much easier to follow if I actually read the solicit, but childhood ends, children grow up, and young Alice is now a mother herself, raising her daughter alone in 1990s London. But the Dollhouse has never forgotten the promise that she made. The Dollhouse knows where she's gone, and so does Jenny, the ghost of the girl who died in her orphanage. Now, for anybody who has read this book, in issue 2, Jenny, with Alice, because of what happened with her killing her father in the first issue, they put her in foster care.
Yeah, and because her mom was accused of murdering
She was accused, yes, and you know, because she's been physically abused by the husband. So Alice took it to her own hand because the voice that the Dollhouse was providing, where you can just forever let me take care of them and be forever in the Dollhouse, and she rejected this voice. Now, in issue number 2, of course, Jenny is always there always has to be one bully, and it just so happened that in this story it's Jenny, and Jenny at the end happened to find out that Alice has this relationship with this Dollhouse, and the Dollhouse knows that Jenny has been picking on, so there was an offer. Do you want us to take care of Jenny for you? The same way that they offered this towards Alice's dad. She rejected it, but it looks like they had plans for Jenny, and they sucked Jenny in. And that's how issue 2 ends. Now, because I don't read solicits, now we're reading a story. Now, of course, you're getting the back and forth. Now, everything that you're pretty much reading from the past is the story of the characters that are in that Dollhouse. So the way I'm reading this book is that later on there's going to be a connection leading to how they got there, but we're just not there yet. So you're just learning about these characters so that you're not reading them as just throwaway characters, even though they kind of feel like that at times. But here I am, and I'm seeing we finally got to learn who the black voice is, and I got to say the interactions between them, I'm a little lost. I'll be totally honest. I mean, there's a lot to unpack, especially when you're having a huge time jump. I think really the only thing to really know is that, yeah, you're getting the black voice. But yeah, this is a time jump. We have Alice now. Alice is a grown-up. We get to see her stories from her being in college to how she gets pregnant, how she has a kid, and how the house is still haunting her till this day. And now it's modern time. And I gotta say, once I finally understood, maybe like on page 16, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the little girl. I'm like, oh, they time jumped. Because of course, I'm too lazy, I'm not gonna go to issue 2 to see what the dates are. Because that's just how I am. So, yes, that's my own doing. But yes, once I realized that this was a time jump, then a lot of things made more sense. And I enjoyed the book, but I will say there was a lot to unpack here. But it's pretty much as the solicit says. I mean, the dollhouse has not forgotten, and it's just that the way that the dollhouse has been now tormenting Alice has been done very well. And it kind of just gets me to a point that now that you actually kind of see ramifications, because here you've never... They actually have a panel where you actually see a character from the dollhouse being like a toy taken out of the dollhouse and being brought to the real world.
Yeah.
Well, you get to see actually what happens to this character, to a character, how they're treated, what will happen to them, you know, going back to like their actual reality in the dollhouse. So it's nice to know that if they're being tinkered with, there are repercussions to that. But overall, I mean, I would say... it was a good read, but I was definitely confused at first.
For sure,
I know you didn't read it, and you've been following it based on other shows.
Yeah, yeah. I've been listening to, of course, Weird Science and the Weird Science DC Comics podcast, and also the Horror Comics podcast. Those two always take like a small little dive into the Joe Hill. The Hill House comics, and they usually do it all in one segment. And I've been enjoying the story told by somebody else. These books, like horror, I'm just now getting into horror, just because I've never really enjoyed the art in horror comics. Because you know me, I like stuff that's a little bit more polished, a little bit more clean. But I understand that this art goes very well with the genre. And so I'm getting used to it. I really enjoyed Basketful of Heads. I think that's a book that I will continue to read because it's a very interesting story. But
it's more, and it's also more grounded.
Yes, it is a little bit more grounded compared to this, and also the next book we're going to be talking about, which is Daphne Byrne. So Daphne Byrne, in the gaslit splendor of the late 19th century New York, rage builds inside a 14-year-old Daphne. The sudden death of her father has left her alone with her irresponsible, grief-stricken mother, who becomes easy prey for a group of occultists promising to contact her dead husband while fighting to disentangle her mother from these charlatans. Daphne begins to sense a strange, insidious presence in her own body, an entity with unspeakable appetites. What does brother want, and could she even stop him if she tried? With writer Laura Marks, who did The Expanse and The Good Fight on TV, and horror art legend Kelly Jones, did Sandman and Batman Red Rain, join forces to unleash spirits from beyond into the Hill House Comics line. This book, like I said, I'm not a huge fan of this genre, and I'm slowly getting into it. But this one was a lot easier to follow. You know, like the solicit said, like the preview said, this is just a simple story of a little girl who lost her father, and her mother is still grieving over him. And we see it's the very what's the phrase, stereotypical, oh, you know, you lost a loved one, I'm a medium, if you pay me I can, you know, contact your dead loved ones and blah blah blah. And this is what happens. They get in contact with a medium, or whatever you want to call them, a psychic, and this woman is convinced, oh, you've really talked to my husband, let me go get my daughter so you can speak, that she can speak to him as well. And the daughter's like, oh yeah, this is totally him. Hey, remember that time?
Oh, great.
Oh, is the alarm or whatever?
Are you kidding me? This is...
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Man, that hasn't happened in, like, months, dude.
No. It happens, like... It hasn't happened since we recorded. But, of course, today is when they decide to do... the tests.
Like, I don't want, like, everybody listening to know, but, like, compared to where you were living to where you're living now, how far away are you from that?
Well, I mean, the nuclear plants are, they're kind of far. I mean, they're maybe, like, 20 miles away.
And you can still hear it?
Well, the thing is that I think that they, wherever, I guess, you're in a blast radius, uh-huh, they have placed alarms along the side. So this is not from over there. This is just them placing, you know, like an alarm, you know, on a light pole here on the street.
Wow.
See, I want people to see what I go through here living in Charlotte, living close to like a nuclear plant. So, yeah. So these are here, just those things that they run, those random
This is a safety test.
Yeah. The question is, I mean, I never want to experience it, but I'm curious, like, how would I know if it's not a test?
When you hear the explosion.
That was a stupid question.
God, that is terrifying.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, pardon everybody. Pardon. I'll try to see when editing if I can, like... Oh, that was a loud one.
Holy
if I
crap.
Can, if I can lower my sound on this one. But, yeah. With this book... This is the kind of art that creeps me out, because I don't know why, in certain cases, it's very visual, and the way that Daphne looks, like, this is just, like, an era that, oh, God, my ears, I kind of feel like it's very, like, Penny Dreadful.
Yes.
Like, those things always creep me out, because I feel like there's so much emotion being run through a character. That I think this is what made like Christina Ricci like so popular back in the days, like in the 90s, mm-hmm, doing like Casper or Adam's Family. She just had a look that was very expressive, even though she wasn't emoting anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, but it was always creepy, but you're intrigued. These are like those kind of stories that I don't know how long these would catch me. Like, hold me?
Yeah.
All right, it's done. I survived. The show can continue.
You know, this type of art works a lot with the shadows and yes, just the shading, and that's what really gets you. Because there's some panels where, like, the shading is, like, it has, like, a half shadow on Daphne's face, and all you can see is her eyes beaming. And, like, that stuff is, like, holy crap, that's, like, it's like she's staring into your soul, man. So...
No, for sure. So I'm curious. I mean, I think like going on to the end, I think with me, it's this time period. When I read things in this time period, I get really confused because I don't know if it's easier to read this language or actually maybe like listen to it. Like if you're watching it on a show compared, because sometimes it's kind of really hard to understand like how exactly something's going, because I feel like you need to know this time period to understand how certain things are being, like, said.
Yeah.
And so for me, whenever I see things in, like, the early 1900s, 1800s, something like that, to me, it's like, it's an initial, like, turnoff, but then I hope, like, what I'm reading can grasp me.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Yeah, so this one, like, it had those moments because, yes, I'm really curious to see who is, like, this inner demon that is inside of her and kind of is, you can see it's kind of, like, controlling her emotions, either from the bullies at the school to, because it was really creepy. You're seeing her going to a tree and she happens to find that rock, that stone, and they're like, what are you grabbing? And she's like, literally dissecting what that stone is and why it's useful. But the fact that it's being done under like this tree with the shades, like you mentioned, like the shadows, it's very terrifying. One of the scariest ones for me is seeing, like, Daphne, and Daphne's in school, but she's happening to listen to, like, what the girls are saying, like, pretty much the introduction of Daphne, and she's literally, like, beheading, like, this...
Oh, yeah, the doll, she's, like...
I don't even know if it's paper, it was, like, a doll.
I can't tell if it's an actual doll or if it's paper, but she cuts off the head, then she cuts off one arm, and then she cuts the entire body in half, and you're just like, okay, Daphne,
yeah,
you're
so,
gonna
I mean,
be
like,
fine.
You're starting to see, like, and then, like, the homeless man looks, like, straight up, like, demon, like, you know, zombified, like, he's decomposed, but it seems like no one's looking at it, so it kind of makes me feel that, is this something that maybe the demon inside of her is allowing her to just see this man in this form?
Or, yeah.
I mean, you don't know, because, yes, like you've mentioned, the mom has been trying to reach for, you know, speak with her husband through the medium, and Daphne kind of, like, calls out, like, this is all crap. I'm like, I made up a story just to see, like, how much are you paying this person?
Yeah.
And you saw, like, the mom, what she was eating for dinner, because she literally can't afford good food, that they're just eating, like, melted pig fat,
yeah,
or melted lard. I do gotta say that the Daphne's, like, handsmaid,
oh yeah,
I'm forgetting her name, but she's creepy as heck with that, with the hairdo.
And this is the part that, like, really turns me off, because, like I said, this genre has a very specific, I guess, whenever most people think of horror comics, because they're almost non-existent in this day and age. Don't get me wrong, there's some really good ones. There's Ice Cream Man, there's
I mean, a really good one that just recently finished, not recently, maybe like 6 months ago, was Infidel.
Yeah, Infidel, you got Cold Spots, you got...
Cold Spots. I was gonna say Bone Parish, but that one,
yeah,
that's not it.
And Bone, technically, it still is in,
yeah,
that,
I mean,
genre.
You have Regression, which is, yeah, a body gore.
So there's good modern horror comics, but majority of the time, when people think of horror comics, they think of the older stuff back in the 70s, 60s, you know, late or mid to late 80s comics. So. And a lot of that dealt with the 18 and 1900s. And it's just a good spot for horror. I don't know why, it just is. Mainly because some of the supernatural is easier to put in the disbelief for the 1800s, the 1900s. But, you know, the way everything's drawn, you can tell, okay, this is old-fashioned. Old-fashioned can sometimes be pushed along to horror. And so when you do see, like you said, the handmaid with the, like, basically the Princess Leia buns, and, you know, like I said, just...
Because the first time you actually see her in the shadows, and you just see her hair. I'm like, oh my god, I don't want to know what this person looks like.
Yeah.
When you actually... Because also, I mean, she's a large figure. So she's big. She seems like one of those, like, 6'2", 6'3", like, big gals, like Big Barda kind.
Uh-huh.
So those are the things that kind of get me, and I'm like, okay, I mean, this might just not be my cup of tea. It's the kind of stuff that I'll read, because I'm really curious, and, you know, I really want to support, you know, this new imprint and stuff like that. So I'm still reading them, because I feel like these things can catch up, and maybe I just need to, it takes me a little while to get a grasp. It's kind of like playing a video game. There's some games that just are... The playability is a little tough at first.
Yeah, it has a little bit of a rough start, but once you get used to it, you get better at it. Same thing with these books.
So that's kind of how I felt with Daphne Byrne. I love Dollhouse. I was just confused as hell because of the time jump, and I don't do Solicitor or anything like that. And, you know, these names... I'm still, you know, at that time, I was only on issue 2, so it's kind of hard to remember... Like, oh, Alice is the little girl. So sometimes I do it more by actually visually seeing her. So when I'm just seeing a story about a girl and she's already in college, I'm like, who the hell is this? You know, that stuff can... But I get it. Now, before... Let's see. Before we do Batman, I want you on our Slack chat provided an article. Now, this is an article from Bleeding Cool, and it was Rich Johnston.
Mm-hmm.
For those who listen to the show repeatedly, you know what our thoughts are on Bleeding Cool. I mean, I didn't even know how to navigate the website because I didn't even go on it, so I had to Google and put like specific words. But they ran another DC Comics, you know, like post-Christmas gossip kind of stuff, and with in regards to the DC timeline, the 5G, Death Metal, Three Jokers, Robins, you know, and more. And what it looks like here is, yes, it looks like the 5G, the fifth generation, where it's kind of like all the heroes from the fourth generation are gonna be, you know, like not necessarily pushed aside, but just giving different roles. They're gonna be aged, you know, all that good stuff, and we're gonna be seeing the likes of Jonathan Kent become Superman, Luke Fox, Batman, Captain Cold Jr. would be the new Flash, Joe Million from Far Sector would be the new Green Lantern. Like, okay, that's what we're seeing. But now, it looks like DC had plans that you shared, which was that it looks like all of the plans that they have right now are completely, not that they're on pause, but they're like in lingo right now, limbo.
Yeah.
Like, nothing is set in stone, because we were supposed to have, during the spring of this year, 2020, a convergence-style event where it looks like we were going to be getting multiple Earths and, you know, maybe stuff like that. Have it be like a mini... I don't know if their convergence is going to be crises.
It's really weird just because I unfortunately dropped out of New 52 pretty early, and I don't know if this was true back then, but when Convergence happened, all of the books basically stopped. And then the only thing that was coming out of DC was Convergence. Apparently, I'm not entirely sure.
Yes, because I believe that after Convergence is when you got their new line, which was the DCU.
Yeah.
And that's when you started getting like the Batgirl of Burnside you know, like a lot of those changes.
So it does say here that in the spring, all of the DC books were to stop. They were going to stop all production on the main titles and come out with a convergent style title to bring us into the 5G. Now, like Mark was saying, that doesn't seem like it's the case right now. And one of the main reasons is, it looks like DC is getting a little, you know, pushback from their own creators. And one of the big ones...
It does seem that way.
One of the big ones is, of course, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. It says here that certain comic book creators, such as Scott Snyder, have been seen as treating 5G as their cue to exit the DC universe. We know that the next issue of Justice League, issue number 39... is going to be, in fact, Scott's last Justice League book. And he did say that he was going to take some time to do some indie comics and to kind of stay away from DC.
Well, not only remove away from DC, it's more like it's seeing this 5G and stuff. It's more about leaving the main canon of DCU and going more towards Black Label.
And it says here, he was exiting DC Universe and go full Black Label / creator owned just as soon as he and Greg Capullo complete the Metal 2 project, currently called Death Metal. And DC apparently wanted all of their 5G references to be just pummeled into Death Metal. And they said no. They said, hey, this is our story. We're trying to write this story to complete our saga in Batman in Justice League, and we just want to finish it. And so it was probably like pulling teeth, but DC finally said, okay, fine, you don't have to put the 5G stuff in your book. And I just think that, like, man, if this is how DC is going to be, like, I feel like this scares me even more for 5G, because they're trying to slam it into any book that they can get their hands on.
Yeah, so it seems right now that things are being very forced, because this convergence style event was supposed to be 2 months, but because of time, then it looks like they were going to cram it to 1 month. And then, because of all of that, it just seems that... And then, instead of it being every title, then it was just going to be a handful of titles. And then, because now they're thinking of moving it to, like, the late summer, early autumn. But that's supposedly when we're going to be getting this, you know, this dark, the death metal, you know... I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but it seemed, again, this is all speculative. This is based on, you know, what Bleeding Cool's reporting, so we're kind of just basing our thoughts on that. But it is worth noting that it is, you know, it is kind of tough. I mean, some people are noticing, you know, they want to know, because, again, we have no sign, although we've heard from, I think it was the Newsarama article that Geoff Johns has mentioned that the Batman Earth One, the latest volume, they're finishing the last issue. They're already on, like, the third or the fourth issue of Three Jokers.
Yeah.
Like, but we have no idea when it's going to be coming out. We've gotten some teases where you've seen Superboy Prime. He's going to be showing up. Now, why is Superboy Prime showing up out of nowhere? So it's kind of like, it makes me feel like, I don't really know if this is a, you know what, oh wow, Geoff Johns is going to be in his own way trying to fix things. Because, you know, usually when Superboy Prime comes, you know, there could be some kind of multiverse, you know, this big thing. But who knows, considering what's going on in Shazam.
Well, for me, like, and somebody brought this up today, and I think it has, you know, a lot to say with how Geoff Johns is viewing the Shazam book, is technically Shazam is infected right now. But in Shazam, he's not. You know?
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are seeing Geoff Johns' Shazam as more of like his own little sandbox that he can play with, and not in actual continuity. Because also... the whole, and I know you haven't been reading it, I don't think, but Justice League Dark, right now there is a lot of stuff that is tampering with magic overall in the DC universe. Shazam is magic based. He should have problems with that. And because he is not in the main continuity, or so a lot of people think, that's why he's not being affected by it in his own title. So yeah. A lot of people think that this Superboy Prime is quite possibly just another character for Johns to play with in his own sandbox and not in the main continuity.
Gotcha. And I mean, and it looks like they are scrapping the whole five Robins in 5 years.
Yeah.
Which was always a stupid idea. And now they're, you know, spreading them out where, you know, Dick was Robin for many years, and yeah, Jason Todd for Yard, then Tim Drake for even longer.
And then a whole decade before Robin even showed up.
Yeah, so now, I don't know what's happening, man, but it's getting to the point where if any of this stuff is really happening, and you're literally seeing the sales in DC going down and down. I mean, I'm not saying, like, oh, bring Geoff Johns back, because honestly, I don't even know if he wants that job back.
Yeah.
Based on everything that's going on.
Like, because of everything that happened, and then for DC to be like, hey, Geoff Johns, you're demoted, and you only get this book. Like, that would suck.
Well, it wasn't even demoted. I mean, yes, it says that he stepped down, which could have just been a nice way of just saying, like, he was let go. But, I mean, he did start his own imprint. Madhouse. So it's one of those things where
where is the Madhouse? That never came to be.
That we know of.
True. But it was something that was said that was going to happen. And I, you know, we haven't heard anything since. You know, and it says here in this article that DC's new phrase or new... a motto for this whole 5G thing is that everything has happened. Everything in the DC continuity from beginning to end has happened. Both Bruce and Clark will be about 60 years old. Bruce will show it a little bit more because he's a human. Clark is a Kryptonian. And, you know, Wonder Woman would be the first DC hero to even fight alongside the soldiers in World War I, just like the movie. And that's what I'm... That one line... is what scares me, is because they're getting things that are very popular in the movie, and this reminds me a lot of what the Ultimate Marvel comics were, because they, a lot of them, like the X-Men, a lot of the X-Men in the Ultimate line were drawn like their movie counterparts, and it just really bothered me. And I don't want DC to take that route and be like, you know what? These movies are very popular. Let's make these comics more like the movies. And it, like, it doesn't make any sense to do that to me personally. Because we have seen that there is no evidence that shows people that watch these movies automatically want to read comics.
Well, I mean, that's definitely the case, because that's something that Marvel normally does, which is they harp on the hype train of what you're seeing on a video game or on a movie, that they create minis towards a specific character, and then it's canceled within issue 3.
Yeah.
Because people, I don't feel that that's the case at all. I don't know, man. I just think that if they're looking at everything, take away Doomsday Clock, which is probably, and honestly, like Batman Damned, I know, like Snyder, like the last Night on Earth, like maybe the first issue. Yes, it's mainly like the Black Label or like the big event stuff that provide the numbers. I mean, I don't know why they just don't look at what happened, you know, 3 years ago. And look at what the number... I mean, Green Arrow was a top 10 book in comics.
Heck yeah.
And it's like, it's one of those things I don't know, man. I honestly don't know anymore. It's kind of like, I know that I'm always a wait and see, but I don't like any of this. Like, if this article is, you know, really telling us and giving us an idea, I mean, because sometimes you bring up these what you're reading here, and you ask some people that are kind of like in the know, and some of this stuff is pretty spot on, or sometimes, you know, it's the schism is correct or the confusion is correct, but it's a little bit different, like worded differently, but it's, I don't know, man, it's really worrisome knowing that they're trying to shove a huge initiative and it's all rushed. Because it tells me that if you're telling me that you need to do a convergence style to give people 2 months of a break, that means that you haven't really started. And I feel like 2 months to create a brand new line in stories is not enough time.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It kind of just feels like it's going to be a failure before it even begins. But we can jump back to, because... to our regular line, which is going back into this current world, and we'll see how long this timeline actually exists, which is Batman 86.
Yes.
By James Tynion, and I believe you have the synopsis?
Yeah, so written by James Tynion, art and cover by Tony S. Daniels. It's a new day in Gotham City, but not the same old Batman. With Bane vanquished and one of his longtime allies gone, Batman has to start picking up the pieces and stepping up his game. Batman has a new plan for Gotham, but he's not the only one. Deathstroke has returned as well under a mysterious new contract that could change everything, beginning a whole new chapter in the life of the Dark Knight. The epic art team of Tony S. Daniel and Danny Mickey are joining by new series writer James Tynion IV. So, we are finished with Tom King's 85-issue run. This is technically Tynion's first Batman issue. High-level thoughts, Mark. What did you think of this issue?
Underwhelmed.
Underwhelmed?
Yeah, it was... I feel like I've read enough of James Tynion on his amazing run, or at least the beginning run of his Detective Comics, which was really good. He has a certain style that, I don't know, it's just very... James Tynion, to me, is a modern version of maybe like a little bit better of like a Peter Tomasi, where you're just getting solid work, but it's nothing that blows you away.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like... That's the relationship that I at least have with James Tynion here. So... I like the overarching thread that it looks like that you can kind of see in a way that he's teasing a possible end to a possible end to Bruce Wayne and like his and his time as Batman. With the very beginning, which is pretty much what you get in every Batman story, which is inner monologuing in the beginning and kind of talking about Alfred and always hope that Bruce Wayne would, you know, leave the Batman aside. And he Bruce always talked about wanting to have a better future for Gotham. Well, why not make that change? So seeing that, I'm like, okay, I get it. I kind of understand where this is going. And I liked the fact, I think we mentioned about it last episode, that we got a little bit of a chance to see more Bruce Wayne. Or that you're going to be getting more of that Bruce Wayne presence.
But ironically, here, you don't see any Bruce Wayne.
But it was like Selina on his behalf. But you're hearing more of like the Bruce Wayne name.
Yes.
That it's kind of like, I feel that I'm like, okay, cool. Like I think we're heading towards that. And again, I don't know if it's going to be something where he's going to run for a mayor, which I kind of threw out there. But I liked it.
I honestly like this whole idea that Bruce Wayne is like this genuine architect for Gotham. And that he has all these brilliant ideas to make Gotham a better place. Which I think is funny because he can never implement them as Batman. Like, only Bruce Wayne can do it and not Batman, which I think is funny.
Yeah. I mean, but he literally plays, like, Sim City on the side.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
But, you know, I enjoyed this book, but it really irked me. And I will tell you, if this Joker epilogue thing is going to be the same as Mr. Freeze, and we have this for the next, like, 6 issues, I'm going to punch somebody.
Well, don't punch your wife. She gave you a microphone.
No, like, because it says at the very end epilogue, and we see a little bit of the Joker's goons, and it just reminded me of the last issue. And we had an epilogue of the Joker goons with that. And we did get we got to see the Joker at the end of that. But we didn't see the Joker here. We only heard him. And I'm just like, I understand that everybody who gets their hands on Batman wants to write a Joker story. But if you want to tell a Joker story, just tell the Joker story. Don't tease us for 5 issues where we're just like, okay. Because it's going to turn into the Mr. Freeze. We're like, okay, we see him. Oh, you told the story, but it wasn't even that great. That's what I feel like it's going to end up like.
And quite possibly. And I mean, you're kind of seeing this whole group. I mean, there was, like, it looks like there was a certain virus that's been going on, that which is like the sea wasp, but which was a mysterious figure. I was curious who it was. When I saw the green, I was like, oh my gosh, is this like the Joker's daughter? That's who I thought at first, but then you find out it's like Cheshire. Yeah. And you're just seeing that there's a lot of people there. You see Merlin, you see Cheshire, you see 2 new villains, which is Gunsmith and Mr. Teeth. And it looks like they're all working for the boss, and they're waiting for that. In the meantime, you got Selina. And Selina is doing something that I'm pretty sure the villain portion of her would love, because she has a lot that she can literally just steal from all these rich and powerful. Uh-huh. But then on the other hand, she's just rubbing elbows with the rich and the famous on behalf of Bruce. And, you know, so it's nice. It was nice seeing their back and forth. I like knowing that although, you know, Tom is going to have the bat and cat, I still like to know that in the other books, you're still getting that dynamic. And it's not, oh, Selina's only important in Tom's run.
Yeah.
So I liked that. There was a moment where it was kind of sad, because you're seeing Batman getting ready to take his next step and kind of get some information, and he's calling out Alfred to do it. But on the intercom, it was Lucius.
And he even says, Alfred's not here. And I'm like, yes. Oh, you didn't have to rub it in, Lucius.
Yeah, so that one there was, that was tough. I was like, oh. See, those are like nice little subtle instances of it being like, oh man, Alfred's not here. Because you know how many times Batman would always say, like, it's just muscle memory.
Yeah.
So those moments were good. Did I like the fact that it seems like with what Batman was trying to stop at that moment, with a whole bunch of these goons and what's going on in the city, of course it's being led by Deathstroke. And that led to a pretty cool confrontation between Batman and Deathstroke while they're fighting. And also using this technology to actually trick all the villains to make it seem that they're actually being chased. I thought that that was really cool as a diversion so that he had time to go one-on-one. But it seems like here that there is a mask. I'm trying to figure out because here at the end, we saw the same way that Cheshire was able to kill somebody with that sea wasp where their bodies are literally just melting. In this case, now when Selina realized that this whole time when she's rubbing elbows that there's clearly somebody that's bad here and is getting ready to do something bad, well, she was able to stop him in time. And when he's actually decomposing, a voice is coming out. And it seems like there is... We don't know who the voice is, but it looks like this voice knows a plan that Selina had in mind or that she's mentioned in the past, and it frightens her. So yeah. I'm trying to, like, now roll through my very minimal Catwoman Rolodex to try to figure out what could it possibly be. To see if it's anything that's current, and I don't remember. The one thing I'm trying to think, since we know that Joker seems to be, you know, the big guy in play, is, like, if we read Batman 50, or Batman 49, I believe, when they're in the church, when Joker was shooting up... Oh, you didn't read issue 49.
But I did. I did. I actually caught
it. Oh, that's right. That's right. You did a reread. Like, you went from the beginning. So remember how Catwoman and Joker in that prison, I mean in the church, they were both on the floor, like laying on the floor, like knocked out?
Yeah.
It kind of makes me feel like, oh, was there like a conversation within them there that maybe they were just like saying something that is making them? Because I'm trying to connect the dots to something that's relevant, because I feel... Now, yes, maybe Tinian might want to show his research chops and do something that Selina said in the 80s.
Well, there's rumors of a brand new villain coming in for this run. And I think it's going to come pretty soon. So I think it'll be that.
Okay. See, because the other thing is, like, I wonder, is the voice a male? Is the voice a female? Because
that's true.
I kind of stopped reading it, but I know that Selina saved her sister in her solo title.
Yeah.
But I was only really reading Catwoman whenever it was really connected. So I don't really know what happened there. So I don't even know if this is something that maybe has been told to her sister. And now maybe her sister's in play. So overall, I mean, I don't know. Am I happy that we maybe, you know, that we're getting kind of like a new voice? Sure, because whatever, we're still getting Tom King in his own title with the Batcat, so it's fine. I mean, if I still want to know that world, is this a little bit more of what I would want? I don't know, not really, but I kind of know what to expect from a Tinian, which is kind of like you know, just, I guess you could say, good dialogue, but not a...
There's going
like
to be a lot
not
of...
He's not like a big scale guy, so...
Yeah, no, he's a lot of exposition. There's going to be a lot of standing and talking. But hopefully it's a good enough story where that is needed, you know?
Yeah, it's like... See, like, with Tinian being a Scott Snyder student... On top of, like, you know, Sabella and, you know, just some Vita Ayala. Like, there are some stud comic book writers now that came from the Scott Snyder school. I don't want to say he's, like, a cheap version based on, like, his trying to be deep, a lot of exposition like Snyder.
Uh-huh.
But it's certainly, like, a downgrade.
For sure.
So I don't feel it. And Tinian, to me, although he's done really good in creator-owned, because for some reason he shows more of a darker side there.
Yeah, I don't know. Something's Eating the Children or whatever it's called, like, that has been pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he's done Something's Eating the Children, but let me see here. There was another run that he did, but it was, I believe it was only 3 issues. See, I know he's done The Woods. I believe it was Tinian. Oh, Eugenic. You've read Eugenic, that book, I was like, whoa, this is awesome. Like, that is top storytelling right there. Yeah. But then you get the Tinian in DC, and it's like, I don't know. I don't like it as much, so
I feel like a lot of people at DC are put on, and it's true, they're put on a little bit of a leash. They can't go all out, you know.
That's true too, but I think Tinian's also one of those writers. Now, I'm not saying he's, in terms of storytelling, on the way I feel about Romita in art, but I feel like one of the reasons why Romita keeps on getting jobs is because, from what I hear, he's amazing in deadlines. He can get you the work quickly.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's very dependable. I feel like Tinian does so much work that I'm like, man, how do you write so many books? Kind of like a Bendis. I mean, Bendis writes so many books. Like, how do you have time to write so many books? I think he's talented enough that he can, you know, maybe provide a solid enough Batman story until they get to the story that they actually want to tell.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how to feel. Am I going to read it? Obviously. But I mean, this did nothing to me to kind of be like, whoa, I am so happy to have Tinian on Batman.
True.
But this is not also like, oh, I'm such a Tom King fanboy, because I understand Tom King, you know, I mean, listen to our shows. I mean, we were kind of poo-pooing his books for a while. I mean, clearly his unorthodox way of telling a story on this main title, it had to go and do more of what makes him great. So we get it. This is not like a Tom King and I'm just butthurt. No, this is more, underwhelmed.
For sure. But with that, I think that is it. Do you have any last words for anything?
I have no words for nothing.
For nothing. All right. Well, of course, you can always find us on Twitter at @CB_Legion. I know I got that wrong last time. You can find me at @FanboyClay. We are also a part of the Nerdy Legion Network. So please, right? Nerdy Legion? Am I getting that right?
NerdyLegion.com. Yes.
Yes.
And you can.
I stayed up until about 3 o'clock last night.
You're hopped up on the dessert you can't name.
I know.
You better tell me what it's called and like text me.
I will.
All right. Oh, actually, you know what? We did forget something. We forgot that we wanted to rate the books.
Oh yeah. So
before,
honestly,
we say bye. Yes, and you can find me at Mark Reads Comics on Twitter. I don't post much, but just follow me anyways. To make me feel better. It doesn't make me feel better. I'm just kidding. So the first one we did, which was The Dollhouse Family. You don't read it, so your grade means nothing. I would say at first I was more towards like a 6 because I had no idea what was going on. But then once the light bulbs clicked in like the 17th page, I was like, oh, okay, this is really cool. So I was more along to like an 8. But okay. It took me to actually understand that this was a time jump. Daphne Byrne, does it have potential? Yes, but to me, it was like a 6.5. Like it.
Yeah, I would give it a 6.5.
I did.
Range.
I did enjoy the art.
Yeah, for sure. The art reminded me a lot of Green Lantern with Morrison right now. Sharp, Liam Sharp. Yeah, some of the art reminded me of him. But I would give this book a in between. I would say 6.8.
Jeez. Couldn't do like 6.75. That's actually in between. Jeez. Anyways. Batman. I'll do like a 7, 7.5. I'll just...
A 7. I enjoyed it a little bit more, I think. I did like the fight scenes. I thought the gadget, the Batman gadget with the shadows was a little weird, but it was interesting where
it was smart to make it, you know, kind of trick them and be like, oh, wow.
He's
it's
following
just like
me.
A projection of his silhouette. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would give it an 8, you know. There was some moments, like we said, with the whole Alfred thing that really pulled at the heartstrings. I enjoyed seeing Selina. I don't know if I liked her design with the way Tony Daniels drew her, but I enjoyed the aesthetic of her being there just because there was precedence for it. So I would give it an 8.
Yeah. So overall, I mean, I think that this is kind of like the stories that you're going to expect until DC figures out what they're doing, and if they ever do. And by that time, it might be too late once they figure it out. But yeah, again, just wanted to thank you for listening, subscribing, following, conversing. And with that being said, hopefully we have a bigger week with more impactful books next week. And with that being said, we'll talk to you guys next week.
All right. See you later.